Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. Our AccuWindow forecast, 48 degrees and clear.
The spice is vital to space travel.
There's a lot going on in the news tonight. It's like the whole world is coming unraveled, but this is where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth, and whether you are traveling across the country tonight or working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear, for you will be traveling with us. So recline your chair, look out the window, relax, because we're about to start another hour of X Squared Radio. The solar wind is a dead calm tonight, 300.2 kilometers per second, with no sunspots actively flaring. The sun's X-ray output has all but flatlined. Solar activity is very low and likely to remain so for the next 24 hours. Sky watchers should be alert for fireballs in the nights ahead. Kind of interesting. Forecasters say Earth is entering a swarm of gravelly debris from Comet Eric. Meteoroids the size of pebbles and small stones hitting Earth's atmosphere at 25 kilometers per second are producing a slow drizzle of very bright fireballs flying out of the constellation Taurus. The display is expected to peak with a few fireballs every hour during the nights of November 5th through the 12th. Have your baseball gloves ready. Our new phone lines are active tonight. Our toll-free number anywhere in North America is 888-429-5471, 888-429-5471. We have a new digital conference line, so if you need to get out and about and listen to the program with your cell phone, you can do so. 805-399-1000, and then just dial 769-608-POUND. 769-608-POUND, and that will get you into the digital conference line where you can listen. You can't talk, but you can listen. Just keep us on speed dial at 888-429-5471 in case you want to call in. Of course, tonight's top story, as this was just unfolding last Sunday when we went on the air, there was some wind and the surge really had not begun until about Monday night. New York state law, however, allows for an extra day of voting if turnout is drastically suppressed because of a natural disaster like Superstorm Sandy. I like how they're not calling it Hurricane Sandy, although it did have a hurricane pattern. It wasn't really hurricane force winds, but it was a superstorm. This thing was massive, almost 900 miles in complete diameter, and the bands were, you know, very well organized. We've had several storms in the Northeast and the Northwest last year. If you'll remember, record snows in Alaska. That must be pretty bad to get record snows in Alaska. Alaska's the place where you would expect to see snow, but a record snow in Alaska must be pretty deep, and it was. Very high winds, too. Winds of almost 100 miles an hour last year. Those of you that were listening to this program got that news. Well, this was a superstorm, and I'm going to call it a baby superstorm, because if you'll remember in the book The Coming Global Superstorm by Art Bell and Whitley Strieber, it was not really in novel form. This was a sort of a book-like documentary. And it was describing a special kind of storm that was the basis for the movie The Day After Tomorrow, which coincidentally they just aired again on satellite TV this week. Not like they're rubbing it in or anything. But these superstorms have a structure like a hurricane, except that they are capable of pulling not just polar air down by actually pulling the jet stream down out of polar regions, which it's a little early in the year to really get polar temperatures. But this superstorm structure is also capable of pulling very high altitude air, which is minus 40, minus 50, minus 60 degrees down to the surface. Now, it didn't do that. But the interesting thing is that the structure was set up. That is to say, you know, when we have a storm like that, it lets us know that the conditions that can spawn a storm like that are there. What are the conditions? Well, interestingly enough, I do remember portions of Art Bell and Whitley Strieber's book, The Coming Global Superstorm. Very warm Atlantic water temperatures, which we do have. And a jet stream that happens to dip down right around, oh, Detroit, really down deep into lower Ohio and then back up the Ohio Valley. And that's exactly the condition that we had. So we had a superstorm that was capable of covering a third of the nation, which the very outer bands of it probably touched Virginia, lower Virginia, and the upper bands way up around Maine, with the eye passing almost directly over New York. Coincidentally enough, the eye went right over New York in the movie. Of course, we didn't get those minus 80 degree temperatures that you saw in the movie, but we got devastation nonetheless. It wasn't the speed of the winds, it was the sustaining of the winds and that incredible storm surge that caused the damage. Now, how does this affect us? Well, it affects us in a lot of ways, not to mention just the economic ways, but it is a personal slap in the face for a lot of people because of the lessons we thought we learned in 2005 when Katrina came ashore in Louisiana. We had a clash of governors and mayors and various federal agencies that tried to help. In this one, we have something quite different. We have a clash of governors and mayors and several federal agencies that are trying to help. Wow, that looks pretty much the same. Well, anyway, that could potentially postpone state, congressional, and even presidential election results beyond Tuesday's election day. Oh, it's true. You see, when Katrina hit, it was in September of 2005. It wasn't a national election year, and it wasn't close to election day of any kind. But in October and early November of 2012, this is the election of the millennia. State Board of Elections spokesman John Conklin confirmed Friday that the law permits election commissioners to create a second day of voting if the turnout in any county is less than 25% of the total number of registered voters. Well, the commissioners, two Democrats and two Republicans, could make that decision after Election Day. Any second day would have to be scheduled, get this, within 20 days. Something like this has never happened before, but due to the extraordinary circumstances concerning this superstorm hitting New York, it could. Officials were checking polling sites Friday of this last week to make sure they can open on Tuesday. Typical turnout is about 60% in most areas, with every state along Sandy's destructive path using electronic voting machines. Election officials were pressing local electric companies to make restoring power a priority to places that were to serve as polling places. See, they didn't use paper ballots. They didn't use mail-in ballots like Ohio did. No, it's all electronic. We've provided lists of poll sites to local utilities, and some of the voting machines do have battery backup, New York State Board of Elections spokesman Tom Connolly said. We are also planning to get generators to polling sites, but it's not like we have an unlimited supply of generators. Elected leaders across the states affected by Sandy were taking different approaches to the impending vote tallies. In hard-hit New York City, Mayor Michael Bloomberg referred all voting-related questions to the City Board of Elections, but he said recovery crews were working hard to restore electricity to schools, many of which serve as the polling places, also fire stations. Voting should proceed smoothly in those places, he said. Well, that is, of course, if the unions don't turn volunteer linemen away. There are some where there were transformers in the basement that were damaged. The Board of Elections will have to find alternative locations. Bloomberg said at a news conference, elections spokeswoman Valerie Vasquez said officials were determining the condition of polling places around five New York boroughs, even as the storm stripped power from the agency's headquarters, forcing workers into temporary office space. She says our trucks are loaded and ready for delivery of all voting materials and equipment once we know that sites have not been damaged. Vasquez went on to say they'll be working around the clock and through the weekend to make sure that all voting sites receive everything they need to be up and running on election day. But by the way it looks, like the Northeast has shown that their American is not a union of states. Their America is a union of unions. Non-union linemen go home, was the battle cry this week as millions of residents were plunged into darkness from Hurricane Sandy. Looks like the union leaders want those states to stay dark just a little longer until they get back from their scheduled break. And even though I would say all the voting machines might be in place and all the polling places might have the lights on, I doubt that voting is at the top of the list of things to do for people in the boroughs and along the New Jersey shore. I think they have other things on their mind, like where am I going to get something to eat? And I hoped that they would all be listening to X Squared Radio and purchase their 72-hour kit from the food investor, but it looks like many of them did not. I hear lots of complaints of, hey, where's my bottle of water? Where's my cookies and cocoa? And why isn't anybody coming to take care of me? Gee, it sounds exactly like what I heard when I was down in Mississippi when Katrina hit. I mean, just exactly like it. You know, you're probably going to be in good shape if you have a 72-hour kit together as far as finding something good to eat. You're probably going to be in good shape if you bought a water filter like I advised you to do last summer when everything was really calm and prosperous up there. Being a blue state, I'm sure you have plenty of prosperity under the leadership of your president. But it seems that a lot of people never did take that advice. They never did get that extra few cans of food. No, within basically 5 hours of when the storm hit, they were dumpster diving for food. That means to me that they eat out every single time they go out to eat. They didn't have anything stored. None of their neighbors had enough store to take care of themselves or their next door neighbor. Stores were wiped out a week before the storm, and they never seemed to restock. It's a lesson. And I would hope that all of you that are listening tonight would learn it right now and go to the food investor at X Squared Radio. Just click on the banner. You're going to get a discount. And I think it might be a good idea to forego that expensive electronic gift and get something really valuable for your loved ones. Get them some food that will keep them safe for 30 years. Don't be a burden on FEMA, because you know what? They're not going to take care of you. And don't bother going and collecting food and giving it to the Red Cross. They don't take it anymore. No, all they want is money and blood. You want to give money and blood? The Red Cross is ready to receive. You want to collect food? You better build your own neighborhood food bank. And by the way, if you've got a van or a truck or a semi or a delivery truck, you might want to gather up a few extra cans in those areas that have not been hit by this terrible disaster. Bottled water, dry ice if you can get your hands on it, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of people to take it off your hands if you want to go up there. I know the churches are mobilizing en masse. I know there are two groups that are always doing a good job, never out there in front of the cameras, never wanting any kind of credit whatsoever. And those two groups are the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and the other one is the Mormons. I know they're doing a good job up there. Well, don't forget, our phone lines are open, 888-429-5471. A brilliant physicist published a revolutionary paper citing 30 other scientific papers that reveal HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, has incredible powers far beyond what most investigators of the high-frequency energy technology suspect. By the way, I should let you know that the great producer of Holes in Heaven, the 1997 documentary on HARP, is getting ready to reshoot a new version of it. And yes, a lot of the original cast is there. Patrick Flanagan, Nick Begich, myself, several of the other contributing scientists to the last documentary, not Bernard Eastland, the inventor of the technology, because he passed away. But we're going to have a lot more new information, and this documentary is going to be a blockbuster. Lots going on, lots going on. The original HARP that was built in 1997 is nothing compared to not only HARP, but the HARP network that they have all over the world now. Dr. Fran De Aquino asserts a fully functional HARP network activated globally can not only affect weather and geophysical events, as we have often said, but influence space and gravity, and even time itself. Now the network is almost complete with the activation of the newest HARP facilities at the bottom of the world, the desolate and alien Antarctic. Will the masters of HARP become the masters of time too? Well, I've always said that if time travel ever exists, even if it's 10,000 years from now, it exists now. Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, not that we invented it now. We may have invented 10,000 years in the future. But where else would they travel but here? I mean, come on, this is the most interesting place in the universe to be. And given all the forces that are at work right now and the teetering idea of democracy globally, has got to be the most interesting situation in global history, at least in the next 10,000 years. Yeah. So if time travel exists, they're here. So factions of three of the largest governments in the world, the U.S., the Russian Federation, and the People's Republic of China, may be cutting orders to eliminate a man, yeah, one guy, who they see as one of the most dangerous in the world. No, he's not one of the world's most hunted multinational terrorists. He's not even a mad scientist with a new virus that can wipe out humanity. None of that. This man's greatest weapon is information. He might be the most dangerous Brazilian physicist, Dr. Fran De Aquino. De Aquino hasn't developed a death ray or obtained secret launch codes or anything like that. He's done something potentially much worse. Oh, yes. He has spilled the scientific and technological beans, let the cat out of the bag of the greatest secret in the world, the ultimate purpose of HARP. Well, some of the beans had already been let out of the bag, Doctor. His paper, High Power ELF Radiation Generated by Modulated HF Heating, High Frequency Heating of the Ionosphere, can cause earthquakes, cyclones, and localized heating, was recently received. The physicist's scholarly work reveals much more than the incredible title the paper promises. Most researchers suspect for some time that the technology can trigger earthquakes and ignite hurricanes. But his confirmations go much further than that. Utilizing high frequencies, he says HARP can modify and even control gravity by blocking gravity waves locally. De Aquino claims heavy objects can be moved, even transported, by creating gravitational shieldings, but the scientists stresses HARP can do even more than that. The ELF technology, that's extremely low frequencies, can generate gravitational shielding mantles, which are made by layers of high dielectric strength semiconductor sandwiched by two metallic foils and insulation layers. The gravitational shielding mantle can be made so that it is only 1 millimeter in thickness. De Aquino's contention is actually supported by the experiments of another physicist, Dimitrios Stravos, from the TEI Athens Department of Electrical Engineering in Greece. Stravos successfully demonstrated an electromagnetic interaction with the gravity field. This is from his abstract. The period of the pendulum oscillations of a suspended electromagnetic resonance circuit formed by quarter wavelength transmission lines sections is found to be affected by electrical parameters of the oscillator driving it. Of particular influence appears to be the magnitude of current at resonance, which depends on the effective quality factor, Q, of the RF tank circuit and the input driving power. Well, it sounds kind of complicated, but it is actually kind of simple. Time dilation and a relativistic effect described in Einstein's special theory of relativity is created by mass approaching the speed of light and affecting gravity by warping space-time. De Aquino's paper shows that when subjected to a uniform ELF electromagnetic field, mass can be transitioned to a different time relative to outside observers. It is done artificially and at will. The analogy he draws envisions an ocean-going vessel. He explains the ship is made of steel. When subjected to a uniform ELF electromagnetic field with intensity and frequency, the ship will perform a transition in time to another time. It is important to note that the electromagnetic field, besides being uniform, must remain within the ship during the transition to the new time. If it is not uniform, each part of the ship will perform transitions to different times in the future. In order for the electromagnetic field to remain within the ship, it is necessary that all the parts which are involved with the generation of the field stay inside the ship. If persons are inside the ship, they will perform transitions to different times in the future because their conductivities and densities are different. So, the ship has to be empty of people, and I would suspect the standing wave of the field, the resonant field that they're building, must be standing inside the hull of the ship, or inside the field of the ship. Remarkably, that is almost the exact scenario described by the alleged witness Carl Allende of the Philadelphia experiment. Now widely regarded as a fabricated story, the early 1940s U.S. Navy experiment, allegedly codenamed Project Rainbow, never actually took place. Believers of the story, however, claim that famed inventor and electrical genius Nikola Tesla assisted in the experiment that involved a naval escort vessel named the USS Eldridge. The purpose was to create invisibility, but ended tragically when the ship was spatially transported and parts of it were trapped in temporal anomalies. It is strongly suspected that much of the HARP technology is Tesla's work. updated and improved, of course, and built upon the latest 21st century scientific knowledge. HAARP in the north area of Alaska is actually a phased array of a very large and well-tuned antennas. A phased array is sort of like putting batteries in series. The more batteries you stack in a series, the higher the voltage you can create. The phased array does the same thing. The power is coupled from antenna to antenna, so that the end antenna is actually broadcasting several thousand times what the first few antennas can generate. Now, HAARP is an ionospheric research program. It was developed by Dr. Bernard Eastland for the Navy. The Navy had ownership of federal land in Alaska that had a tremendous amount of natural gas under it. And having no pipeline or way to use the natural gas, the Navy commissioned Bernard Eastland to find a way to utilize that natural gas. So he came up with HAARP. And there were seven main patents filed. There have been since many modifications to those and many more classified technologies that have branched off of that. But in the most, recent information that we have, which is not a tremendous amount in the public domain, Jesse Ventura, actually, for his debut program called Conspiracy Theories on True TV, did an expose on HAARP. He tried to gain access to HAARP. They would not let him get on the facility, even as a former governor. I built a scale model of HAARP as a weather chamber for the same program and demonstrated how HAARP can be used to actually move clouds. I did so inside a cloud chamber, of course, much lower power levels, but the same kind of thing can be used to move clouds and move the jet stream and push the ionosphere around to shape the upper atmosphere pretty much any way they want to from each one of these locations. Now, HAARP being an ionospheric heater locally is pretty dangerous. It's like throwing a giant ground wire up to the ionosphere to the ground. And it could cause, a backfire, which I called a solar tap, which is sort of like a giant lightning bolt coming down out of the ionosphere and striking the ground. But when you build a network of these things, it's sort of like a grid, sort of like a frequency grid. Each time the giant, standing wave that you're building this resonant wave around the planet comes down, or the trough of that standing wave, you build one of these HAARP stations to amplify and add to constructively interfere with that wave. So you're constantly building that resonance around and around and around the planet. So not only are you creating a phased array within each individual station, that is to say, starting at the first antenna, ending up at, say, the 400th antenna with 400 times the power output, but as that wave goes around the planet and reaches the next station, it's jacked up again. And that goes around and around and around the planet, while each one is taking the signal from the previous one and amplifying it even more. So a billion watts becomes 6 billion watts or 60 billion watts, and you really get the picture of what can be done. Now, on top of the high frequency part, and by the way, it's called the Active Auroral Research Project, because each time they fire this thing at certain frequencies, it will cause an aurora, because the ionosphere that's being heated has no way to discharge the energy except by fluorescing, that is to say, giving off light. And so the sort of aurora that you see from the ground is a telltale sign that HAARP is being activated at those high energy levels. And there's one in Alaska, Puerto Rico, the Europeans have one, the Russians have one. There's a 1 gigawatt one in Tromsø, Norway, the Sura Ionospheric Heating Facility in Vasilursk near Nizhniv Novgorod is capable of transmitting 190 megawatts. So, like I said, it's a tremendous amount of energy that can be built up. Gigawatts and gigawatts of energy. Now, some of the main scientific findings from HARP include generation of very low frequency waves by modulated heating of the auroral electrojet. Useful because very low frequency waves ordinarily require gigantic antennas because, you know, you can't, a full wave antenna for a 60 hertz wave would be something like 20,000 miles long. Well, you can't do that practically. But what you can do is you can modulate the auroral electrojet and you can generate these VLF and ELF and ULF waves, standing for very low frequency, extremely low frequencies, and ultra low frequencies. These get all the way down to the area of like 1.4 cycles per second. Now, the production of weak luminous glow, that's below what can be seen with the naked eye, but it's measurable from absorption of HARP's signal. Some of it is visible. The longer the wavelength gets, the more, you know, close to the infrared range that it gets. But as you begin to get shorter and shorter, well, down around 950, 900 nanometers, you can begin to see it with the naked eye. Now, you're not going to see that from the undulations of the ionosphere, but you're going to see it from the electrons that are being excited on the ions in the ionosphere. They will collectively put off light in the visible range. Production of extremely low frequency waves all the way down to the 0.1 cycle per second range. Now, these are next to impossible to produce any other way. I mean, this is a subwoofer because the length of the transmit antenna is just not possible to produce. You have to do this in this kind of modulated, phased fashion. And there are several things that you can do with waves like that. And we have discussed them before on the program, but I guess not for a while. We talked about them a little bit on Coast to Coast. Hold on. These very low frequency waves have several effects. On the Earth itself, they can actually resonate with the planet and cause earthquakes. On the human psyche, they can entrain the human mind, and they can cause anxiety, bad dreams, visions, voices. On the physiology of the human body, it can cause the organs to shut down. It can cause your bowels to fail, your kidneys to fail. It can cause heart attacks. It can cause hemorrhages in the brain and in the capillaries, in the eyes, different things like that. Obviously, you know, a devastating weapon of mass destruction. On a microelectronic circuitry range, they can cause resonations in all of the little transmitters, similar to an electromagnetic pulse, but with short-term effects. It can scramble it. It can even fry some of the more delicate circuits. These can exist in airplanes, in trains, in boats, in all kinds of personal electronic gear like cell phones and iPads and computers. So as you can see, this is something that would be of very high interest to those in the defense industry. And, of course, it's interesting to them, and so they put money in it and they built it. Why? Well, come on, the answer is simple. If they don't, somebody will. And if somebody else does and we have no way to defend against it, then, you know, we're vulnerable. It's just a simple matter of we have to build the sword first before our enemy builds a sword. We might be able to defend ourselves by crossing swords, and then again we might be able to preemptively strike if we have to with something far more superior. The other thing that can be done is that the planet can actually be X-rayed. Now, why would this be important? Well, it's important for a lot of reasons. One, of course, is oil and gas exploration. A lot of you believe in the theory of abiotic oil. That is to say, dinosaurs and trees and ancient, you know, swamplands did not decay and get buried beneath millions of pounds of silt and blah, 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 and that's how we have oil. It doesn't come from biotic material. It doesn't come from botanical or, biological mass rotting beneath the ground. It comes from deep within the earth, sort of like the blood of the planet. It oozes up into these cavities like ancient seabeds that have long since rotted away or volcanic bubbles that are trapped in the rock and where magma once flowed. Now there's nothing, and so they fill up with oil. We drill into it, and boom, you know, BP is all happy. That the source is abiotic is, of course, interesting to those who manage and distribute energy around our planet in the form of bubbling black crude. And so they'd like to find it so that they don't have to drill 1,000 times to hit it. They can drill 10 times and hit it. In order to find that, because we've only drilled about 40,000 feet and only a very, very few holes that deep, we just don't have the technology to drill that deep. You know how long? That's 8 miles of drill pipe suspended from a Kelly. A Kelly is like a rotating brake, like somebody holding on to the top of that steel. The steel is so long and so heavy, it will literally pull itself in two. And when it does, well, your drill steel is just lost down in the hole. You'll never get it out. There's nothing strong enough to grab a hold of it and pull it out. It weighs too much in too small of an area. So about 40,000 feet is about as deep as we can drill using the methods that we use today. Even if we could drill the hole, we don't have pumps powerful enough to push the mud from the bottom of the hole to the top of the hole to get the drill cuttings out. So you understand the problem. So we have to find where this abiotic oil makes its way as close to the surface as possible so that we can drill into it and hit it and pipe it. Well, how do you find that? Well, you find it using the same technology that I helped develop back in the early 80s, which is a ground probing radar, except you'd use a very powerful signal with a very long wavelength, because my original paper was long wave radiation spectroscopy for oil and gas exploration. That is done using HARP. These waves go down to the earth and then they are picked up locally and spectrographically analyzed to be able to find these giant reservoirs. So that's one of the features of this HARP. Now, Tesla, who was born the 10th of July, 1856. Yeah, 1856, before the Civil War. Talk about a person being born out of time. He died the 7th of January, 1943, which was before the end of World War II. He did not live to see nuclear war. He did send signals to other planets. He allegedly received signals back from those planets. It is often said, well, maybe not often, but I say it as often as I get a chance, if you invent one great thing, one great invention, you are a genius to be sure. But in our society, if you invent two, well, then you're a crackpot. Tesla was an inventor. And on top of that, he was a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer. And he explored in places that not even science fiction would go. He was an important contributor to the birth of commercial electricity. Came up with AC, electric power systems, including the polyphase system, three-phase electricity of electrical distribution and the AC motor. Later, he came out and said, hey, I know I invented this and it's great and it is probably going to make a great power grid someday, but it isn't good for you. You need to go back to DC. And that's, of course, when they banished him to Colorado Springs. He was born an ethnic Serb. Tesla was a subject of the Austrian Empire by birth. and later became an American citizen. He pioneered modern electrical engineering, and many of his discoveries were of groundbreaking importance. They weren't just breakthroughs. They were macro shifts in the way that we think about energy and the way we even dream about applying power. Tesla demonstrated wireless energy transfer to power electronic devices as early as 1893 and aspired to intercontinental wireless transmission of industrial power in his unfinished Wardenclyffe Tower project. Of course, you know, energizing the atmosphere and then picking that stuff off the atmosphere like a giant, static charge in the air. If you happen to live near the transmitter, life was not good. You know, we get nervous about holding a cell phone to our head. You can imagine how nervous you would have felt living next to one of his towers. At the beginning of the last century, he patented methods of transmitting electrical energy through the natural environment, air, the water, and even the earth itself. Tesla developed a method of transmitting electrical impulses via the ionosphere, using the earth and its elements as a conductor to achieve his ambition of supplying free electricity to the world, using very high and low frequencies. He also later cited Alaska as one of the locations for such an experiment because of its proximity to the target of conduction. Tesla therefore believed that were enough electricity pumped into the Earth's atmosphere, which stretches from the ground to the ionosphere, an electrically conducting set of layers 30 miles and higher above it, and oscillated at specific frequencies, a growing number of harmonic waves would be set in motion within it. Propagating around the globe, they would then be used, thought Tesla, not only for radio transmission, but for wireless broadcast of electricity into homes and industrial plants, as well as to ships at sea and aircraft, if all were equipped with suitable receivers. He wrote, and I quote, "Impossible as it seemed, this planet, despite its vast extent, behaves like a conductor of limited dimensions. The tremendous significance of this fact in the transmission of energy in my system had already become quite clear to me. Not only was it possible to telegraphic messages to any distance without wires, as I recognized long ago, but also to impress on the entire globe the faint modulations of the human voice. Far more significant is the ability to transmit power in unlimited amounts to almost any terrestrial distance and without loss. More importantly, Tesla's research led him to the conclusion that the electrical properties of the negatively charged Earth and its positively charged upper atmosphere could be used to supply an almost unlimited quantity of electricity. It sounds great, doesn't it? To test his ideas, Tesla built a mammoth 75 megawatt magnifying transmitter able to light a bank of 250 watt light bulbs of his own design for a total of 10,000 watts of energy at a distance of 26 miles. The California Institute of Technology has only recently achieved an optimal figure of 43% in the transmission of microwaves over a maximum distance of 1 mile. No wires of any kind were utilized. The energy passed right through the ground, and Tesla claimed that only 5% of it was wasted. Now, I can tell you that we have almost 100% pure aluminum wire, and we have more than 5% loss in 26 miles. He was able to transmit this using the ground as part of the circuit, and only 5% of it was wasted. Unfortunately, he didn't leave any notes on how he did it. He just did it. He figured if he did it, they would come to him. But they didn't. You know why, of course. Because they couldn't meter it. By the way, I'm going to be giving a lecture on this at the Breakthrough Energy Conference in Holland this next weekend. Two lectures. One is on the tenuous nature of the global power grid relative to natural disasters. I had no idea when I wrote the paper and prepared the lecture that something like Superstorm Sandy could happen so soon. But it's a great illustrator as to, you know, what happens when the grid is assaulted by wind. We'll also cover in that lecture what happens when the grid is assaulted by solar flares, by coronal mass ejections. There is a council out there that has done a great job in discussing all of the threats to the global grid, terrorism, natural disasters, and solar activity, and even galactic activity. The only thing that missing is the alternative to that, competition to that, and that's what the second lecture is on, is creating a global fund of about $1 billion, and believe me, this is chicken feed. This is something that that could be done just by going through the trash of most of the organizations that go through tremendous amounts of energy, money. But creating a fund of $1 billion, and this would be a self-replicating fund, that is to say, money would be granted to organizations who can show proclivity for a prototype of some kind of breakthrough energy, whether it's some kind of generator, some kind of motor, some kind of energy conservation device, whether it's solar or wind or magnetic or resonant. And I'm sure there's lots and lots of stuff on benches all over the world, in attics and garages and home shops, and retired engineers or engineers that work somewhere and can't get the company they're working for to be interested in it, so they work on it at home. But all of those prototypes need money. And this would be a very a closely watched civilian oversight organization, which would prevent fraud. It would prevent politicians from getting their hands on it. It would prevent organizations like the solar company that was recently hauled up to Washington, and rightly so, because they went through almost $1 billion worth of taxpayer funds. And the founder of the company was able to take, I know this is going to blow your mind, I really don't want to hurt your feelings here, but he was able to take $450 million out of the company by selling stock into the market with an onslaught of press releases which surrounded or which were generated by the absconding with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of taxpayer funds. And believe it or not, this individual sat before Congress. I know you're going to find this unbelievable, but he actually justified his robbing the American taxpayer and the American public investor out of $450 million, almost half $1 billion personally, because of 10 years of blood, sweat, and tears that he had put into the company. Utterly ridiculous. A crime beyond crimes. And of course, no one's ever going to find that money. He and John Corzine and others like him are, or like them, are what is wrong with the world. It is not the wealthy that have earned it. Far from it, my friends. It is individuals like this who defraud the system. And unfortunately, very unfortunately, the one area that most of these charlatans seem to end up is in the area of new energy. Now, this fund would have to be very intelligent. I don't mean a lot of red tape. I don't mean a lot of hoops to jump through. I'm talking about oversight. You don't give out the money and let them write a check back to some politician you know, laundering their way to the top without some kind of oversight. You watch what they do. You ask for some kind of accountability. And not at the end of the project when things are too late, not when all the money's been squandered. You know, it's just like building a house. Just like building a house. You go to the bank and they give you a loan. Well, they don't give you the loan for the entire house. Well, they do, but they don't give you a draw on the entire house. First, they say, okay, you can do the groundbreaking and build your foundation and pass that inspection. And once you do that, then the bank will release you the next money, which is for the framing, to get it under roof, get it in the dry, get the doors and windows on it and the siding on the outside. You know, the house is in the dry now. Okay, you pass that. Now you get the next draw. Now you can put the plumbing and the wiring and the insulation, get those things inspected, the things roughed in anyway. You get that inspected, you get the next draw. And then you put the drywall on the walls and you paint it and you trim it. Now you don't have to put any floor coverings down if you don't want to, but you do have to get the house pretty much finished at that point. It's got to pass inspection. Now if it passes inspection and they give you a certificate of occupancy, you get the rest of your money. You pay all your subs off, you buy your materials, and the rest, you know, if you get any more money out of the house, you use it for landscaping or whatever you're going to do. But the rest of that is either the sweat equity that you're putting in or the profit to your general contractor. And that's the way you do it, folks. It's simple. We've done it millions and millions of times on budgets 1,000 times a week, literally, around this country. Why can't we do it in energy? I have no idea. We write a check, and then we just magically think the energy is going to show up. We magically think the prototype's going to get done, and it's going to work just as proof of concept, and we go to the guy's house, and guess what? Oh, he's added on to his house. He bought a new Cadillac. He bought his wife a new diamond ring. He put his kids through college, but no prototype. You get the picture? That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Now, Tesla had a world system of wireless transmission that he invented. The world system had resulted from a combination of several original discoveries made by the inventor in the course of long-continued research and experimentation. Why was it not capitalized upon? I told you. Because if you come up with one great idea, which you did with AC power, you're a genius. You come up with two, and you're a crackpot. Okay? He was an exile. He was a man ahead of his time. Industry, the people might have been ready, but industry was not ready for everything that he brought out. Maybe now we are. Maybe now, at 7 billion people around the planet, we are ready. This technology makes possible not only instantaneous and precise wireless transmissions of any kinds of signals, messages, or characters to all parts of the world, but also the interconnection of the existing telegraph, telephone, and other signal stations without any change in their present equipment. By its means, for instance, a telephone subscriber here may call up and talk to any other subject on the globe. Well, I suppose you could do that, but it isn't going to be cheap, that's for sure, unless you use Skype. An inexpensive receiver, no bigger than a watch, will enable him to listen anywhere on land or sea to a speech delivered or music played in some other place, however distant. The world system is based on the application of certain important inventions and discoveries, including, and there are several here, the Tesla transformer, the magnifying transmitter, the wireless system. And Tesla was quoted in 1915 in the New York Times, December 8th issue, as saying, this is prior to World War I now, okay? 1915. It is not a time to go into the details of this thing. It is founded upon a principle that means great things in times of peace. It can be used for great things in war. But I repeat, this is no time to talk of such things. It is perfectly practicable to transmit electrical energy without wires and produce destructive effects at a distance. I have already constructed a wireless transmitter, which makes this possible, and have described it in my technical publications, among which I refer to my patent number 1119732, recently granted. With transmitters of this kind, we are enabled to project electrical energy in any amount to any distance and apply it for innumerable purposes, both in war and peace. However, his early experiments in using extremely low frequencies led him to another startling conclusion. He could produce earthquakes. In a February 1912 interview in the publication The World Today, Nikola Tesla said that it would be possible to split the planet by combining vibrations with the correct resonance of the Earth itself. Within a few weeks, I could set the Earth's crust into such a state of vibrations that it would rise and fall hundreds of feet, throwing rivers out of their beds, wrecking buildings, and practically destroying civilization. An article called Tesla's Controlled Earthquakes. This is in the 1935 New York American on July 11th. Seems to confirm the validity of Tesla's experiments. Tesla's experiments in transmitting mechanical vibrations through the Earth, called by him the art of telegeodynamics, were roughly described by the scientist as a sort of controlled earthquake. Tesla stated, "The rhythmical vibrations pass through the Earth with almost no loss of energy. It becomes possible to convey mechanical effects to the greatest terrestrial distances and produce all kinds of unique effects. The invention could be used with destructive effect in war." He also came up with a directed energy weapon. Tesla worked on plans for this as early as the early 1900s until his death in 1937. Tesla wrote a treatise entitled The Art of Projecting Concentrated Non-Dispersive Energy Through the Natural Media, which concerned charged particle beams. However, his initial intentions appear to have been to invent a weapon so destructive that it would be an ultimate deterrent and actually put an end to war. Tesla published the document in an attempt to expound on the technical description of a superweapon that would put an end to all war. This treatise describing the particle beam is currently in the Nikola Tesla Museum archive in Belgrade. It describes an open-ended vacuum tube with a gas jet seal that allows particles to exit, a method of charging particles to millions of volts, and a method of creating and directing non-dispersive particle streams through electrostatic repulsion. Oh, there's much more, which we will cover in the next hour. Be right back with more X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We're coming to you live from an undisclosed location east of the Appalachian Mountains. Superstorm Sandy is now a recent memory, and many of you in the Northeast are suffering and displaced from that, and for that our heart goes out to you. For the rest of you that are listening to this and watching their example, I again admonish you to get to X Squared Radio's website, x2-radio.com. Click on the Food Investor. It's the upper right-hand side there by the affiliates. My good friends Scott Barzee and Danny Morris out there in Utah have developed a food process that will preserve food for 30 years with no preservatives and maintain all that flavor. Now, this is food that's lightweight, comes in foil packs. You can stick a whole bunch of these in a backpack and keep yourself in food for a number of days or weeks or even months. And it will keep for 30 years, so it's kind of a set-it-and-forget-it food. So if you're considering that, you know, multi-hundred-dollar electronic gift for your kids or grandkids, maybe they're away at college or you're away and they're, you know, back in high school or something like that, or you have little kids, I would suggest going to the Food Investor and buying that gift. Now, that's a real gift of love. That's the kind of gift that people can really appreciate. And who knows, might even save their lives. Because I think we have learned our lesson now as a modern nation. Here we are in the 21st century. We have seen in 2005 and now we're seeing again in 2012. It doesn't matter where the storm hits. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. It doesn't matter if you're a poor state of Mississippi or if you're an immensely wealthy nation like New York or New Jersey. When Mother Nature strikes, everybody suffers. And we have shown now, we have learned our lesson that FEMA is not there for us. FEMA is not going to take care of you. The Red Cross, oh, they might bring you some cookies and cocoa. But do you realize that it's been less than a week since Superstorm Sandy hit? Not really that high of winds, but certainly tossed boats about the sea. But the storm surge was devastating. Come on, it relocated those sand levees, you know, into every mailbox for dozens of blocks down the street. The point is that had those people had food storage like we have been talking about here for 6 months from our great affiliates, the Food Investor, there wouldn't be these shouts for FEMA, where's my hamburger? There wouldn't be these riots and these baseball bat interludes that we're having at the local grocery because the Red Cross is not bringing food in for them. You wouldn't have those complaints because these people could take care of themselves, and you could too. So get to the Food Investor and take care of yourself. Take care of those you love. You got time. Superstorm hasn't hit you yet. Solar flare hasn't come yet. The coronal mass ejection hasn't wiped out all the electronics, shutting down your freezer and ruining all the meat that you've been storing yet. So why take the chance, folks? Get to my friends, Scott and Danny, out there in Utah. Click on the Food Investor and get prepared. Okay, enough said. And if you want to do some reading on the side, you can read a couple of great books. Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, Learn How to Generate Some Wealth and Success and Happiness for Yourself in the Coming Year. You can get that by going to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, of course, Nook and Kindle. Or you can go to my website at rememberingthefuturebook.com. That link is also at X Squared Radio's website. And when you buy from there, you'll get the book autographed and You get the entire audio version for free as a download instantly. So while you're waiting for the book to arrive in mail, you can listen to it. And it's conveniently recorded in individual files, one for each chapter. So you can put it on your iPod or your MP3 device and listen to the book. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. The audiobook's only $7.95. That's a great deal. Now, if you're interested in government, and who isn't these days, unless you're absolutely sick and tired of the commercials that have been running, but no one, really no one on either side, Republican or Democrat or independent, can say this is not an election of all times. Come on, usually we have a choice between two candidates which are pretty much the same. I mean, you get slightly left and slightly right, but they kind of hold on to the center like a, you know, like a maypole. They go around it a little bit, but it's pretty much they just want to get elected. This election, though, my gosh, both candidates are exactly right. There is a clear choice, folks. There's a clear choice. Now, all rhetoric aside, all the analysts and pundits and blah, blah, blah and rhetoric aside, come on. Here are the two choices. On the one side, you vote for big government. Oh, come on. You want to work for the government? You want to get a check from the government? You want to have $1,000 a month in food stamps for the rest of your life? You want to be on disability? You want to get a government check every month and not have to hit a lick at a snake the rest of your life? You got a party that's built and tailored to you right now. The Democrat Party is your party. You need to go pull the blue lever. But if you have some self-pride, if you've got dignity, a shred of it left, if you believe that we should be self-reliant, oh, yeah, it'll be tough. There might be days when you miss a payment. There might be days when you lose your house or lose your car. There might be days you don't have a job. But you'll be your own man. You'll be your own woman. You'll be struggling, yes, but it will be worth it because you have the potential, the same as everybody else, to achieve the American dream. And I don't mean just buying a house that you're going to make payments on the next 30 years. I mean being rich, not wealthy. You know, there's a difference. Shaq is rich. The guy that signs Shaq's check is wealthy. You got it? That's the difference. But to generate some wealth and some dignity where you can travel a little bit, where you can, you know, buy the furniture that you like, eventually buy the car that you like, put your kids to college, that kind of success, that's yours. You could have it. Or not, but you'll have your dignity because nobody will be giving you nothing. But you can achieve everything. In that viewpoint, government is much smaller, smaller by hundreds of thousands of employees. And regulations? Well, if you want to start a small business or mow your grass or plant a garden or hang out your laundry, guess what? You can do it because the regulations are going to be cut back. All those federal agencies that have been getting all up in your stuff, they're going to leave you alone. Cars were safe 10 years ago, okay? In 1992, cars were safe. In 2002, cars were safe. In 2007, cars were safer than they'd ever been, and traffic fatalities dropped drastically. Now, do you think it was because the cars were safer? A little bit. Seat belts, if people will wear them, you don't need those airbags. 68% of traffic fatalities are caused by one thing. No, it's not speeding. Wrong. It's alcohol. 68% of traffic fatalities involved alcohol, and there were a lot of them, 25,000 a year. Now we're at a point lower than we've ever been, and it's not because the cars are that much safer. I mean, whether a crinkle zone is 1 inch better or one, you know, millimeter per second better than it was is ridiculous. That's not what's saving lives. What's saving lives is they're getting drunk drivers off the road. They're confiscating their cars. They're putting him in jail. They're making sure they don't drive anymore. That's what's saving lives. It's no longer socially acceptable. The commercials are better. The police are better. The surveillance is better. The social acceptability of driving drunk is long gone. That's what's saving lives. So why do we need 6,000 more regulations put on car makers? Are you about sick and tired of spending $35,000 for a car? I am. I am. My first house cost $26,500. You think I feel good about spending that much on a car? I don't. You know how amazing it is for me to find out people have a car payment of $750 a month? Are you insane? $750 a month for a car? You know why that is? It's not because tires are any more expensive. It's not because paint or glass or seatbelts or any of that stuff's any more expensive. Labor? Come on, it's been pretty flat for 10 years, even longer. It's the regulations. It's the government agencies, the lawyers, and the think tanks that sit around all day and say, hey, we could probably save another 7,500 lives a year if we do this. And sure enough, they make a case for it. They sue the right agency. They sue the right companies. And voila, they have a new regulation. It's nonsense. Roll the regulations back where they were in 2007. Everything was fine. It's called a Control-Alt-Delete move. Okay? You ever play electronic chess? I do all the time. And eventually I work myself into a situation where the computer is kicking my butt. I realize if I make another move, I'm going to be in checkmate. So you know what I hit? I hit the redo button a couple of times. Back up a few steps. Take another attack at it. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking here. That's all anybody's asking here. And that's the choice you have. If we keep going the way we're going, it's checkmate, my friends. Game over. We no longer have a government governing. We have a government ruling. You see the difference? All right. Now, when you get ready to go vote on Tuesday, or if you're going to go in some of these extended early voting tonight or tomorrow, I don't even know anybody's doing early voting on Monday. They might be in the Northeast because of the terrible disaster they've had up there. But when you go vote tomorrow, I want you to think you do have a clear choice. Checkmate or hit that redo button a couple of times and let's take another shot at it with somebody who really knows what they're doing. How do I know? Because he's done it. He's held a job. He's given jobs. He's hired people. He's fired people. He's moved money around. Everything he has done in his entire life has been a success. On the other side, a person's never had a W-2 filed in his life. Ever. Never had a job. Never hired anybody. And never owned a thing that wasn't bought with the taxpayers' money. Think about it. Think about it. That's the choice you have. No, I'm not ranting. I'm passionate. I'm just telling you, you do have a choice, and the choice is so clear. Now, we're talking about Tesla. We're talking about these great inventions that are just kind of hovering out there, and people wonder, you know, is it all that good? Well, yes, it is. But, you know, things that are very, very good can also be very, very bad. The beam, which he was talking about, his particle beam, would be so devastating that Tesla, actually thought that it would create world peace. Why? Well, because no one would want to go to war. I mean, it would just be devastating if they did. Well, little does he know that a few years later, some absolutely insane politician, a civilian, would order the dropping of a bomb so devastating, so powerful, no one even knew if it would light the entire atmosphere of the Earth on fire. And where did they drop it? Oh, they didn't drop it on a military target. No, they dropped it on civilian targets. They blew up factories, and hundreds of thousands of civilians were fried at Ground Zero and many, many years later. Oh, they did it. Not just once. They did it twice. Did it have its effect? Yeah, it did, for about 5 years, until the secret leaked out. Somebody else figured it out, and now they had the weapon. And fortunately, thank God, fortunately, no one has ever used that weapon in war again. But what if they did? What if they did? Has it resulted in world peace? Hell no. We have been at war ever since. Ever since. Now, the beam, he states, involves four new inventions, two of which have already been tested. One of these is a method and apparatus for producing rays and other manifestations of energy in free air, eliminating the necessity for high vacuum. A second is a method of process for producing a very great electrical force. The third is a method for amplifying this force, and the fourth is a method for producing a tremendous electrical repelling force. This would be the projector or gun of the system. The voltage for propelling the beam to its objective, according to its inventor, would attain a potential of 50 million volts. With this enormous voltage, he said, microscopic electrical particles of matter will be catapulted on their mission of defensive destruction. He has been working on this invention, he added, for many years and has recently made a number of improvements in it. Now, I can see if someone was launching 100 intercontinental ballistic missiles at you and you turned your particle beam weapons skyward toward where these weapons of mass destruction are falling at supersonic speeds out of the sky, and you turned your weapon on and you vaporized all of those weapons, that's a good thing. But if you turn that weapon on your enemy, the way the ancient Vedas and the Vedic texts describe, then it's not a good thing. It's not world peace. It's global war. Allegedly, after further experimentation, Tesla concluded that his weapon was too powerful for any one country to possess. He gave each of the allied countries parts of the weapon schematic, forcing them to work together to realize its potential. Only Russia contacted Tesla and requested more information regarding his work. Soon after his death, Tesla's papers and other property were impounded. Oh, not by the Russians. By the United States Alien Property Custodian Office in Tesla's compound at the Manhattan warehouse, even though he was a naturalized citizen. Dr. John G. Trump was the main government official who went over Tesla's secret papers after his death in 1943. At the time, Trump was a well-known electrical engineer serving as a technical aide to the National Defense Research Committee of the Office of Scientific Research and Development, Technical Aides, Division 14. At the time of his death, Tesla had been working on the Teleforce weapon, or Death Ray, that he had unsuccessfully marketed to the U.S. War Department. It appears that Teleforce was related to his research into ball lightning and plasma, and was conceived as a particle beam weapon. The U.S. government claimed they did not find a prototype of the device in the safe. After the FBI was contacted by the War Department, his papers were declared top secret. The personal effects were sequestered on the advice of presidential advisors. Altogether, in Tesla's effects, there were the contents of his safe, two truckloads of papers and apparatus from his hotel, another 75 packing crates and trunks and a storage facility, and another 80 large trunks in another storage facility. The Navy and several federal officials spent 2 days microfilming some of the stuff at the Office of Alien Properties storage facility in 1943, and that was it, until October of 1945. Tesla's family and the Yugoslav embassy struggled with the American authorities to gain these items after his death because of the potential significance of some of his research. However, Tesla's technological legacy most definitely lives on in HARP and similar research establishments throughout the world. So I imagine that they are still struggling over this information. And I'm not exactly sure we're making any headway with it. We certainly have not seen a death ray, not that I know of. We are using ELF and ULF on the battlefield. Excuse me while I take a sip of water. By the way, that reminds me, I need to give a shout out to my friends at Truth Frequency Network, Chris and Sherry. I am a truth freak, so I belong on the network. We've proudly been on the BBS Radio Network now. We're going into our 8th year, and you have been here with us. We have grown, and sometimes we've shrunk, because sometimes I do things right, and sometimes I do things wrong. But I so enjoy the mail that you have written me, the kind words, and for that reason, I have kept on doing it. Every Sunday evening for 3 hours between 8 and 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 and 8 Pacific Time, I get my 3 hours with you. I get to tell you my thoughts on the news of the day and technology that's coming out. Occasionally, we interview guests. We have been through many hundreds here on this program. And we will yet interview more. I might go back through the list from time to time. But about a year ago, I changed my format just a little bit more so I could spend more time with you personally. And you seem to have responded by increasing my audience by tenfold. So I'm happy with it if you're happy with it. Now, you can call in. There's a lot going on. There are a political election, a national election of our time, of our lifetimes. This is no ordinary election. You'll remember in 2010, 63 House members lost their jobs as a groundswell called the Tea Party Movement of Americans said enough is enough. This debt is killing us. And the federal government is borrowing up all the money and there's nothing left for us to borrow as businesses and as entrepreneurs wanting to do stuff. The banks are broke. Investors are broke. There's no money anywhere because the federal government has borrowed it all. The Tea Party was tired of it. So they decided to clean house and that's what they did. Now, maybe they've gone to sleep and maybe they haven't. Maybe the mainstream press is right. Maybe it really is 49-49 out there. I don't know. You tell me what's going on in your neighborhood. 888-429-5471. Science is absolutely exploding. We're getting ready to introduce affordable electric vehicles. Energy is undergoing an absolute revolution, not just in how efficient we can drive on cheap fuel like gasoline and natural gas, but on electricity as well. We have become an electronic society. We are connected globally, one with another. We're doing it right now over the airwaves, over actually the web waves. We've downsized into tablets. We've upsized into vast networks of interconnectedness, nation to nation. Soulmates and friends and long-lost friends from other planets, other universes, are getting together on this planet at this time. And we're resonating not only with each other, but also with planet Earth. Oh, yes. These are times that civilizations throughout time look for. This is the day all of the prophets and all of the prognosticators from whom we have writings looked for. This is it. The Maya, they wrote about our day. The Egyptians, they prognosticated on our day. The Sumerians, I'm sorry, they had their heyday, but they were looking for our day. The Atlanteans, the Lemurians were all looking for a day like this, when we could travel the world by air and by sea in a matter of hours. We could send messages instantaneously, pictures and sound instantaneously around the planet. This is it. This is the time when we have satellites in space and craft walking on other planets telling us about those planets. This is it. We're here. We made it. We're alive. Our toes are right over the edge of a precipice. We can walk off. We can be led off. We can be pushed off the cliff. Or we as a people can step back. In a moment of repose, we can say, hey, wait a minute. I like all the rah-rah. I like all the hope is change and greater things are coming. But I took my dark sunglasses off for a moment and I realized my toes are right here on the edge of this cliff. And if I keep going the way you've told me to go, I'm going to splat on the rocks below. And I don't really think that's a good idea. I'm going to step back from this. I'm going to rewind a little bit. I'm going to put somebody else at the helm, and we're going to make a right-hand turn. That's what we're talking about. 888-429-5471. Give us a call, and we'll talk about it. There's a tremendous amount going on. I'm going to skip through the rest of the harp stuff. I have a ton more, and if you're interested in it, you can email me, bagnew@x2-radio.com, bagnew@x2-radio.com, and I will be happy to send you my 40-page program notes tonight. I'm going to skip through the rest of the harp stuff. There's a ton here, over 16 pages, and I'd be happy to have you read it. But I want to do a GMO update, a genetically modified organisms update. We had talked about Monsanto from time to time. And, of course, we have played for you statements by their officials. We have talked about this multi-trillion dollar plan to literally take control of the world's food supplies. And we've done our best to try to explain that situation to you so that you can make informed choices. Well, Natural News, which is, one of the greatest sources out there, has done a great job, putting this information together. And, we're happy to be able to tap into this information from time to time just because they do a good job. They do a good job putting this information together, and I think that it's worth bringing you these stories. Though it barely received any media attention at the time, a renowned British biochemist who back in 1998 exposed the shocking truth about how genetically modified organisms cause organ damage, reproductive failure, digestive dysfunction, impaired immunity, and cancer, among many other conditions. He was immediately fired from his job. A team of researchers who assisted him dismissed from their post, not within days, within 24 hours from the time when the findings went public. This individual, who is considered to be one of the world's most respected and well-learned biochemists, had for 3 years led a team of researchers from Scotland's prestigious Research Institute in studying the health effects of a novel GM potato with built-in BT toxin. Much to the surprise of many, the team discovered that, contrary to the rhetoric, BT potato was responsible for causing severe health damage in test rats, a fact that was quickly relayed to the media out of concern for public health. Now, he didn't follow proper channels, and that's what got him fired. So, that's what caused the problem. Let's see if I can fix this. I can't really fix the margins on this, so I'm missing some of this. Although they were praised for their honest assessment into this generally genetically tampered potato, Pustsai and his colleagues were chastised by industry-backed government authorities, namely British Prime Minister Tony Blair, whose office was discovered to have secretly contacted RRI, that's the research institute I was talking about, just hours after Pustsai and his team announced the result of the research. For speaking the truth, Pustsai was immediately fired from his position and his team was dismissed. And there's lots more. I don't know if I can change this. Let's see if I can fix the margins of this a little bit and see what happens. If I can clean this up. Nope, it's not going to clean up. This article's cut off, so I can't read part of it. But the findings will soon be published in respective journals, Neurotoxicology and Ecotoxicology, but it remains to be seen. It's heavily influenced by biotechnical interests and the political structures that control it and fund it. Will accept the results, and I'm sure his team will be punished for defying the status quo. There are updates, of course, in that modern science can hardly be considered the independent, truth-seeking gold standard of interpreting this data. The truth about GMOs, as uncovered by mounds of independent research, is that they are inadequately safety tested. The research results are shrouded in deception, and thanks to the corporatized pro-GMO culture of mainstream science. And it doesn't just stop there. Politicians in Washington, D.C., and other countries throughout the UN are heavily funded, I would go so far as to say bought and paid for by Monsanto and other concerns like it. But they have also, some of them have actually worked for Monsanto. They have been on Monsanto payroll. They've been sponsored by Monsanto, funded by Monsanto. And the litigation that goes on in the agencies has been funded by Monsanto. And as I've explained to you many times on this program, I call this litigious legislation. Let me explain the term. The agencies calculate and plan the point in the future where they want to write a regulation that has the force of law that will control the public domain. That is to say, government will control business. Government will control private life. Well, they can't just up and do it. First, they have to design a pathway. And so they very carefully, very meticulously, like a surgeon, plan their court cases in reverse. So what they do is they pick and choose the cases that they can try and win. And they do it with specific language in the complaint. Now, why do they do this? Because they know if they can win the case with very specific language in the case, they can then use that case as a precedent for the next case. And then they go after the next victim, sue in court using the court's decision from the previous case as evidence to make their case for the second lawsuit, and so on and so forth. And so in a period of a year or 2 years or 5 years, they reach the point where they have the legal precedence. And so they set up a deductive syllogism, which says, well, if this guy was guilty, and this guy was guilty, and this company was guilty, and we won this award, and we levied this fine, then our decision to do this is correct. And so this regulation can be written. Now, that's called litigious legislation, and that's exactly what the agencies do. Congress knows they do it, and they're powerless to stop it. Congress will haul them in and will blast them. I mean, we'll just excoriate them. Their hair will be pasted back against the back of their head. They blaze at them so hard. And yet, they sit there stone-faced, knowing that that congressman is just a temp. He's powerless. He can do nothing. Oh, he can hold you in contempt of Congress. Big deal. William Holder got convicted of contempt of Congress. Big deal. Nothing will ever be done because Congress can't do anything. They're powerless. They've been gutted. The regulations that the agencies put in place keep them by law from doing anything against them. It's sort of like a teacher's tenure. Once they're in, they can't be fired. Why? Well, because you don't want, you know, political swings one way or the other, teachers being fired at the whim of a politician. That's why the tenure was put in place in the first place. Well, the agencies have exactly the same thing. They have rules and regulations that do not allow Congress to get involved. They call it outside influence. Outside influence. That's what it's called in the law, which is actually a regulation, which has the force of law, sort of like a false law. Now, these laws are passed, and these fines are levied, and these fines are levied, and fees are levied against the taxpayers. However, you and I have no representation in that government. And that, my friends, is tyranny. And here's how it works. A judge okays genetically modified crops on national wildlife refuges. You know what that means, don't you? Come on. Animals. The animals get into the crops. A federal judge says genetically modified crops can be planted on national wildlife refuges in the Midwest. Herbicide-resistant crops. You know why they do this, don't you? They call it Roundup Ready. Why do they call it Roundup Ready? Because you know what happens when you spray Roundup on stuff, right? You know, you spray it in the cracks of your sidewalk and it kills the grass, and the cracks of your sidewalk goes down to the roots and kills it. That's because the grass is not Roundup ready. It goes in there and literally kills the plant. Well, what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to spray the herbicide, that is like a pesticide except it kills plants. But you want your crop to survive. You want everything else to die. You want to kill all the weeds. You want to kill everything that competes for the nutrients in the ground with your plant. And so you genetically modify the plant so that it's Roundup ready. Well, how do you do that? Well, you splice the Roundup chemical into the plant itself. You take genes from cabbage or jellyfish and you splice it into the crop so that it can handle the Roundup and pretend it's not there. But then you eat the fruit of that vine. You eat the tuber. You eat the fruit of the vegetable that comes off that plant. That's how it works. And, of course, you're just eating the plant, right? We're at the top of the food chain, right? So I mean, you got to eat a whole lot of potatoes. You got to eat a whole lot of soybeans before you get these effects. I mean, think about it. They feed the rats like 1,000 times what you would normally eat in a lifetime, and then they get like liver cancer or a big tumor on the side of their head. Oh, yeah, it happens to the rat, but only after big overdoses like that. But think, people. They're putting it on wildlife refuges, which means the animals then eat those crops, and then we eat the animals, which means that you're already getting hundreds of times more of this stuff, because the animals are what they eat, just like we are. But as the animals go up the food chain, it concentrates in higher and higher amounts in the tissues of that animal, even fish. So, the agency limits the use of the genetically modified crops to native habitat restoration projects, but environmental groups sued to stop the practice. Here's what they said. Whenever you're planting native grasses, developing wetlands, or trying to plant trees for forested habitat, it just gives you a better chance for success starting with a fairly clean seedbed. That's what they said. That's what the genetically modified crew said. The judge's ruling affirms the agency followed environmental rules when it established a policy to use genetically modified crops, he said. While the USFWS, who uses farm crops for habitat management to provide food for wildlife and attract wildlife for public viewing and photography, the Midwest region does not allow the use of genetically modified crops for those purposes. It's very important, he said. It provides for greater success of our restoration efforts, Spears said. And this alternative we selected, it based on the benefit of the natural resources and a desire to have the least impact on the environment. Center for Food Safety attorney Paige Tomaselli said she is disappointed by the ruling. The advocacy group is considering an appeal of the judge's decision. Well, I would appeal it too. That's a big, big problem. Because what happens is, as I said, the genetically modified features of the vegetation end up being concentrated in the flesh of the animal. Now, it might not damage the first generation, but let's say the deer have a fawn, and the fawn grows up eating the same crops. And then that deer has a fawn, or two fawns, and they end up eating the crops. Or rabbits eat the crops. And then a wolf or a coyote eats the rabbit. You see how it goes up the food chain. And it becomes more and more and more concentrated. Now, Mr. Spear is only thinking about the success of the plants. Why? Well, because we might spray the wildlife area with herbicide. And we want the plants to survive. Why would you spray a wildlife region with herbicide? Exactly. You get it. What happens is the crops end up growing in the wildlife areas, and then the bees and the birds and other animals and the wind picks up the pollen and blows it over to the domestic crops. And eventually their marker continues to grow, and the genetically modified crops take over the domestic crops. That's how you get it. Let's go to the phones, find out what's going on in California. Roland, welcome to the program.
Rex, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Getting you to start another week.
Ah, yes. I have a newspaper from Rosamond, California. It's called Rosamond, California.
Yeah.
They have a project. It's called the Modern It says Modern Rosamond dedicates EDF Pacific Wind and Catalina Solar Project out in it's actually in Mojave, which is a town just north of that.
Yeah,
in Mojave and Rosamond. Anyway, supposedly it's like the largest green energy project so far.
Right, and I believe I know that project, and they have all the power that they're going to make for the next 10 years is already pre-sold.
Yep, and this one, I believe, the guy was telling me, I met two guys last night that worked for, I think it was Catalina Solar, and they were saying that Walmart is the one behind Catalina Solar. I don't know if that's true. I haven't checked it out. But that's
what well, it doesn't surprise me. It takes a tremendous amount of private equity to make these things happen. You know, it's not all government money. They got to buy land. They got to buy the solar panels. They got to build the tracking systems, power handling, storage equipment. And then you have to go find somebody to buy all the power. Well, that outfit out in Mojave, they already have all the power they can make pre-sold.
Right. And Warren Buffett, I understand, he's putting a lot of money behind the company out of Arizona called First Power. First Solar. I'm sorry, First Solar. Have you heard of that one?
I have. First Solar's CEO has been in front of Congress all week, and they have been literally taking this guy apart limb from limb, and rightfully so, because he took $450 million out of the company by selling personal stock into the market. In other words, he drove the company into bankruptcy to make himself rich.
Oh, man, I hope they nail him.
Well, of course, he took several million dollars and donated it back to the Obama campaign.
Ah, there's how we get around it.
Well, 78% of all the government awards in the last 46 months have gone to Obama bundlers.
Wow. That's a big percentage.
That's a big percentage. I can tell you this. I've been in this business of energy and automotive for almost 40 years, a little over 35 years. I have never ever seen this level of corruption.
Unbelievable. Well, I hope Congress really puts them on the hot seat.
Well, I do too. I hope that we not only change the man in charge, but we flush the House, and in 2 years, we turn around and take the Senate apart as well. 33 senators are up for election this time. I believe there are 6 or 7 Democrat seats that are up in 2 years. I think it's 14 Democrat senators that are up, including Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. And I think they should be kicked out. Well, Nancy Pelosi is a congresswoman, but Harry Reid and Barbara Boxer, Maxine Waters, and these others, they need to be sent home.
Well, yeah, because Barbara Boxer for the state of California really hasn't done that. Not
well, I could tell a story, but I'm not going to because I don't think it would add value here. But I can just tell you there's levels of corruption here that no one even knows is going on.
Oh, I've been to the office in Los Angeles in the federal courthouse. Believe me, I can get an idea. You don't have to say a word to me. I saw it. I saw it in person.
Well, when you have enough dealings with these agencies and you see what private companies have to do to get assistance from the government, and I don't mean just money. I just mean getting through the red tape so you can go
to permits and everything else.
Well, the things that you have to do are unspeakable and you don't want to say in public. I'll tell you that.
I believe 100%. There's nothing you could tell me that I didn't already figure out. I mean, we can just leave it at that. I have something better for you. I ran into a guy last night playing drums at a place called Leeville Market, 16 miles west of Lancaster. A really nice guy named Jim Olaf owns the market and the venue. He's got an outdoor stage. So he has a band called South Borden. It's an interesting band. His band, the lineup, consistently changes. What it is, the guy Mario Grossi was playing last night and gave me his card. His drum teacher, when he was younger, and I can't remember the guy's last name right offhand, was Hal from the Wall of Sound, Phil Spector's Wall of Sound. So he's a pretty good drummer.
And all these guys
they're all retired, pretty much. You know, I mean, I'm sure that they're still playing all over, but they're older and they've been around for a long, long time in that music business, and they know everything. I thought it was very nice of him to get the guitar and to let me know a venue. He's been playing at a Moose Lodge and didn't know when it was. And give me a card and say, give me a call, and I'll let you know exactly what time.
I think music and hot chocolate are the keys to world peace.
It's got to be something more than what we're doing. Because where we've been isn't working.
Well, you know, I think we just have a funny way of doing it, but thank goodness we have a system that allows us to deal with it. We don't have to have revolutions. We don't have to have riots. We don't have to have protests. We can if we want to. But we have a system of government that still works, that still allows the people.
I think it's just a little bit broken.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, right now we have a republic and then we have the agency government. And if we can get rid of the agency government, or not get rid of it, but fix it and get it back into the control of the states, I think we can save this republic and we can move on to the next century.
Who was saying that? Somebody was saying that more power needs to be given to the states and less federal.
Well, that would be Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, James Madison.
There's a lot of people coming out saying the same thing.
Well, that's what the whole book Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty, was all about. The states conduct a constitutional convention, and they repeal some amendments and pass some amendments and empower the Supreme Court to be able to make some decisions based upon those amendments that will take this agency of government that was set up in 1932 and for the last 80 years has grown into this behemoth which now rules us like a red-headed stepchild.
Oh, yeah. Like the kingdom.
Well, it's going to be pretty hard to beat 375,000 federal workers, but it can be done.
Right. And the thing is, we got all these state employees. They also have the city employees that can't even get medical insurance to go to UCLA or Cedar Sinai because the city of Los Angeles says they're too expensive. So therefore, they have to go to a county USC hospital, my belief. I don't know if that's where they sent them. They have to take other doctors other than UCLA or Cedar Sinai. They lost their doctors to 2,200 families that was in the paper the other day. That's a big loss for those hospitals.
Well, I have a story tonight about how the agency government defeats doctors in the name of government control, and I'm going to cover that. But I'm going to let you go for now, Roland. I appreciate the update.
One last little question.
Sure.
Worldwide, did you hear something about the Irish are starting to default on loans because the Germans want their money back?
It's not exactly that. What I heard, and I've got a story on it tonight, is that the Germans, as you know, for the last 30 years, have been the economic powerhouse of the EU. Mm-hmm. And their gold, which backs the previous mark and now backs their euro, is being held by the Federal Reserve and other foreign vaults. The Germans are a little bit nervous that gold has been over-leveraged, and they would like to either audit their gold or move their gold back to Germany. And they have filed a lawsuit. And I think... Yeah, exactly.
What about the Irish thing? I heard that the Irish government is so in debt to them that the people over there that bought these houses overpriced may lose their houses to banks.
Yes. That's partly the problem. That's partly the catalyst that is making them wonder, well, gee, you know, if we make this loan, if we bail them out, do we have the gold to back it? I mean, they say we do, but all we really have is a paper receipt. We haven't seen our gold in a while. And so they've asked to do an audit. They want to make sure it's there. And there is a suspicion that it might not be.
Wow.
Well, at the very least, if they decide to actually take possession, physical possession of their gold, it's going to cause an inflation in the price of the metal. And it won't just be gold. It will also be silver. Because, you know, gold, palladium, rhodium, platinum are all very, very high. But silver's not. Silver has been held down. And
well,
largely because of the efforts
of... You were on the show a while back about how silver was undervalued dramatically.
Yeah, very undervalued. Because J.P. Morgan Stanley is not only long on silver because they actually possess the silver, but they own over 30 million short contracts on silver as well.
Wow.
Well, on the one hand, you would think, how could you be shorting silver and be long on silver at the same time? But technically speaking, because of the way the SEC is set up, it's not illegal. And so J.P. Morgan Stanley is working both sides, the futures market on the short side and even the naked short side and the long side as well because they actually own the silver.
Right. You know, we talked about that before. They need to stop naked shorting.
Yes, they do. Well, it's illegal. It's against the law. It's against the law all over the world. But the way the foreign markets handle it is they don't let the market makers and brokers trade if they fail to deliver the stock. In this country, you could just go right on trading. No problem.
Well, then you're putting into that.
I think the man that's going in the White House is going to make cabinet changes that will make that happen.
Let's hope so. Anyway, another guy named Bernie Dresden. This guy's a drummer that plays on TV, plays all kinds of things. He plays for Halloween for tips at a place called Porky's in Van Nuys, California. This gentleman is going to be playing on Tuesday night at a place called Cafe Cordial, which is in Sherman Oaks, California. This guy has played with just about everyone you can imagine. He's probably one of the hardest working musicians I think I've ever met in my life. But Don Felder of the Eagles had a show on tonight on a local radio station, 100.3 FM.
Yeah.
Very interesting guy. Don Felder, when he was 15, he said he was in a band with Stephen Stills. And he's gone on to say he does benefits in Phoenix, Arizona with Alice Cooper, and they lose golf balls for kids because it's a fundraiser during the Christmas time. For kids for the after school stuff.
Wow, what a great guy.
Some of these guys, friends of mine, like David Chamberlain, he plays with Glenn Frey. Don Kirk, another friend of mine, he knew Joe Walsh. And Don Felder was saying the Eagles used to open for Fleetwood Mac all the time. So the funny part is, Don Kirk told me he had no connection into Fleetwood Mac. Well, sure he does. It's from Joe Walsh. I worked for Don Felder when I was doing electric gates in Malibu. And he was saying that a house that he rented out in Malibu after he lost weight and lose it, he sold the house on that I did electric gates on. He said he was renting a house on Malibu Beach. And he wrote the song Hotel California with Joe Walsh, the music boy. And he said it was a great time. And the thing is, that had to be the house he called me out to get a bid on. And I said, Don, I don't know about this rented house. How can you buy a gate and put it on a rented house and just leave it? But, you know, maybe he would have. I gave him a bid, but it never happened. Anyway, no,
that's amazing song. It's hard to sing. I think Don's about the only guy that can sing that song. That song takes so much air to sing. It's unbelievable.
He said he had a blast with the guys doing the whole album. So it was great.
Yeah.
So he's a really nice guy. I mean, I know. I work for him, and I think he's one of the best people I work for. But I work for a lot of great people.
Well, keep on working. Keep bringing us those reports from California. I got to go. I'm out of time.
That's a good thing in Rosemont, though. Brooks, have a great evening.
All right. Thanks, Roland.
Thank you, Brooks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, let's take a quick break. Letters from the Sky from Muse. I love this song. Those of you that saw I Am Number 4, this was the song at the end of the movie. Here we go. This is Brooks Agnew, X Squared Radio, coming to you live from east of the Appalachian Mountains. That was Civil Twilight. Their song, Letters from the Sky. Really great words. We've had a caller hanging on through the break. Let's go ahead and get him on. Scott, welcome to the program. How are you? I know Scott's out there. Maybe our... There he is.
Say again.
How are you doing, Scott?
Good. Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine now.
Okay. I was just thinking about... I've been thinking about the Philadelphia experiment for years now, and if it did happen, might it have been successful in that we were told that they were wanting to make a ship invisible, but maybe their objective was to move a ship hundreds of miles in a second. Both would be a military advantage, but...
Oh, no question about it. I mean, I think about what Dr. Aquino was trying to say in his HARP paper, that they're actually able to reach this point of resonation where they can block gravity and they can actually slip in between time, even if it's just for, you know, a second or two. It's enough to, you know, upset a weapon system that might be targeting that ship and give you a whale of an advantage in the battlefield.
Yeah. So there we have it. Dolores Cannon has some interesting material out there in her book, The Convoluted Universe, where she has taken people into hypnosis, and they visit other lifetimes or other existences, and some of the material involves parallel realities, some of the material involves portals in between our world and other worlds, or dimensions between our world or from our world to another dimension. I'm finding a rather interesting reading, The Convoluted Universe, Volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Wow, four volumes of it. That's a lot of writing, and probably some good variety in that, too.
Yes, different people, different perspectives, different topics. First volume has some on Atlantis. Third volume has some on Lemuria. There's some writings about Christ. There's quite an interesting variety of experiences. One man was taken back to a lifetime where he was a being on Mars. And from what was gathered from that lifetime, there was a civilization on Mars. And I guess you would call the Zeta Reticuli body. They had the 3-foot-tall alien body. In this particular lifetime regression, he was horrified to find that the planet had been destroyed, that the planet in between Mars and Jupiter, now the asteroid belt, had blown itself up, and a portion of that planet had struck Mars and destroyed the planet's atmosphere, and all perished.
Wow, when you say it had blown itself up, you mean through, you know, intraplanetary war or through just some, you know, geotechnical disaster?
They were misusing power, is what I've gathered from that. Perhaps it was crystal power, perhaps it was energy of some kind. They were perhaps on the greedy side and abused the power, and the planet destroyed itself. He was in a spaceship en route somewhere and returning, and found Mars had been destroyed, and then he had to go to Earth, but then Earth wasn't. The atmosphere was very dense compared to what he was used to on Mars, and there was a lot of horror that all of his people had died, except for a few who weren't on the planet when it happened. And on, lots of interesting stories.
Hopefully it didn't result from building a network of HARP antennas around the planet to build a standing wave that they propagated stronger and stronger around the planet the way they're trying to do now. I might accomplish what Tesla had said he could do back in 1912, which is to literally split the planet in two.
And one thing about radionics, that I had a friend, he passed away, I guess about 10 years ago, but he had bought a radionics machine from England and had used it for healing purposes, and it can be used for healing. Basically, you can also decipher a person's emotional state and help move them, for example, out of anxiety and into well-being. And I had a toothache, and he had my hair sample, and it involved putting a hair sample in the machine.
Oh, wow.
And he turned it on, and within a second, this incredible pain that I had after I'd had a root canal earlier that year went away from using this machine. And I noticed the pain going away. I said, have you turned it on? Yes, I've had it on for about a minute now. So there's healing power there.
Yeah, I believe that. I've got a friend, John Riley, who owns a company called Zero Point Research, and he makes a live stream generator, which is a low-frequency, very high-voltage magnetic field that, it's almost DC. It's that low frequency. But it tends to re-energize the cells if you're in proximity to it or have your hand on it or your foot on it. In my case, last May, and May 3rd of this year, I was struck on my motorcycle by a car. Broke my leg and my neck, and, you know, of course, I was in all the braces and stuff. But I was using the Lifestream generator every other day. So literally, 6 weeks, I was out of all the casts, and I've been walking around and running around ever since. And the doctors were, sore amazed. They said, wow, you heal fast. I said, well, I do, but the Lifestream generator is really what did it.
This particular device could be used long distance. He was in New Jersey. I'm in Florida.
Oh, no way.
Yes. I was talking to him on the phone and when we were doing this. And, yes. So either the machine worked or my toothache went away on its own. One of the two.
That's really incredible. It just tuned to your DNA.
I'll let you go so others can talk. I just wanted to throw those things in.
I appreciate your call, Scott. Don't be a stranger. Always good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. I was going to share this story with you, Earth Explorers. This is a story of Dr. Andrew T. Lee, a Washington physician whose father founded his practice in the late 1960s, is shutting operations down because of the burdens created by the federal health care reform, in addition to Medicare and insurance company hassles. Health care regulations and laws created by the current president under the 2010 Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act are the biggest problem, said Dr. Andrew Lee, a general practitioner who has treated more than 10,000 patients since he opened his business. I think all citizens in America should be provided with some access to health care, he said, but I am not sure this is the right way to shovel a massive law through, he said. My anticipation is that it will be modified greatly. Lee said he and his wife, who is also a doctor, took over his father's practice in 1999 at the same address in the capital's Chinatown where his father started it. He actually grew up in the house next door to the clinic. The doctor was born in D.C. at the former Columbia Hospital for Women, now a condominium complex called the Columbian. He said, when I walk by with my kids, I tell them, you don't know, I was born there. I could retire there. My wife and I would have this discussion for years, but it was not until 3 years ago that he realized that they were fighting a losing battle. I'm not sure if it is 100% related to government as much as it is the health insurance companies, he said. They tend to have a lot of factors in there that make you do things like pre-authorizations, which increase your administrative time. Regardless of who controls the White House and Congress, Lee said, the business will close sometime next year. We're going to close our practice and join Johns Hopkins University. Johns Hopkins is in Baltimore, as you know. My brother was a chairman of physiology there for many years. The school does not buy practices or have private practices inside its own business, so the couple will actually close the business and become salaried employees of the Johns Hopkins Clinic, although they will take their patient records with them with the intention of treating them at their new home. I've told our patients we will just be seven blocks away and that Hopkins is committed to practicing very good medicine. We still will be able to see them there. It's just a different site. One of the considerations he and his wife dealt with was the transition from running their own business and being their own boss. Initially, giving up the ownership of one's job was difficult, the doctor said. But in another way, Lee and his wife are glad to be freed from the hassles from the government and insurance companies. My wife and I look forward to it because we can just focus on being good physicians, not worrying about the administrative headaches. We really looked at the benefits versus the risk, and we were really unsure about what is going to happen with the Affordable Care Act, so we quit. In my view, the two winners for the Affordable Care Act are the insurance companies because they're making billions, and more people have to purchase insurance, as well as the pharmaceutical companies who are also making billions because many more people will be buying medications. They are the two lobby groups that have fared pretty well from this, and they have spent millions and millions of dollars lobbying Washington politicians to get the Affordable Health Care Act passed. For Lee's Medicare patients, the problem is not the reimbursement rates, which in some cases is more generous than what private insurance companies pay. What really hurts us, with Congress unable to come to a budget and the fiscal crisis in January, they have always talked about cutting 27% if this thing goes through. They usually come up with a stopgap for another 6 months, but we are always under this threat. The last one that happened last year and the year before, our Medicare clearinghouse tells us, just don't submit anything for 1 month. And then after the stopgap comes through, then send us the bills again. The result is that the practice loses its Medicare revenue for that month. Another problem is that there is no tort reform on the table, and that's a huge problem here in D.C. There's no cap on the personal injury portion of malpractice. All these things add cost, and our costs are going to run us out of our practice. The lawyers are taking home about a quarter of the medical revenue. Without tort reform, malpractice insurance keeps going up and up. Dr. Lee pays $25,000 a year, and his wife roughly half of that. So between them, they're paying $37,500 a year, and that's for $1.5 million for occurrence with a total coverage of $3 million. And by the way, there's no deductible, and the premium is also not tax deductible. The doctor said the tort situation makes it very difficult for doctors to find an insurance company, and that in turn makes it an unwelcome environment for doctors to practice in the city limits. In the end, the neighborhood doctors like him are all going away. What people really like is the access to their doctor, but that is a thing of the past. We deliberately run this as a very small practice. There are no nurse practitioners, no physician's assistants. We just have the two staff people up front and me and my wife, Lee said. The practice does not accept new patients unless they are friends or related. We have used electronic record keeping since 2006, and it took up a half year or 8 months to fully utilize the system. The government is forcing doctors to use computers to cut down cost and electronic records to cut down on paperwork. What that does is put the onus of the cost on the individual physicians. Under the federal government's meaningful use programs, if you bought computer equipment in 2011, you could put in for reimbursement. The problem is that Lee and his wife bought their system in 2006. New regulations require completely new computer systems in 2013, which for Lee would cost about $15,000 to $20,000. So as you can see, two doctors, not a large organization, local neighborhood doctors are being absolutely driven out of business because there are two hands in their pockets, the lawyers and the insurance companies on the bottom end, and then on the top end is pharmaceutical and the extra insurance costs to the people who use them, and slowly but surely they're being driven out of business, and they're not alone. Here in North Carolina, a recent presidential candidate, recently convicted of campaign fraud, John Edwards, literally drove every single obstetrician out of business in this state. So many baby doctors came to this state in hopes of delivering lots of babies. And what happened was, because of junk science and lawsuits against doctors for cerebral palsy, so many large awards were won. Hospitals went out of the business of delivering babies, and obstetricians left the state. So if you're going to have a baby in North Carolina, you're going to have it on your kitchen table with a midwife, or you're going to have it in another state. How about that? And thanks to the lawyers and insurance companies making it impossible for doctors to operate their business. And, of course, the government scooping off 43% off the top doesn't help at all. Earlier tonight, Roland and I were talking about the possibility of gold really being in trouble. This is in our article that came out just 2 days ago. It's, is a central bank gold run at hand? I want you to listen closely. If you've got gold bullion, you don't possess the metal, I want you to think about this very hard. If you've got the ability to buy silver right now, silver is around $32 an ounce, and actually buy the metal, buy 1 ounce, 5 ounce, or 10 ounce bars of it. By the way, if you recently saw the movie Looper, he is putting 10-ounce bars on that shelf in there. It's kind of interesting to watch. On learning that French gold was being held by the U.S. Federal Reserve, French President Charles de Gaulle is reported to have said, quote, "I could hardly sleep easily with such an arrangement." So in 1965, he ordered French Navy ships to cross the Atlantic to pick up $150 million in gold held in the Fed's New York vaults and deliver it to the Banque de France in Paris. It was a prudent move by de Gaulle, and it was consistent with the advice I have long given. Do not leave your gold in the care of somebody else. Take physical possession of your gold and your silver. If you've got silver bullion, get it. Whenever I buy silver, I buy the metal. They ship it to my house, okay? I don't keep the silver in a bank vault. I keep it at home where I can find it. You can't find it, but I can find it. You need to do the same thing with your gold. De Gaulle realized the United States was running an international con. It had promised that holders of U.S. dollars would always be able to redeem them for gold at the official rate of $35 per ounce. But, like someone writing bad checks, it was clear that the U.S. was printing more dollars than it could possibly redeem at that rate. And that's exactly what the government has been doing. The Fed has been printing between $40 and $80 billion a month and flooding it into the market. That's what they're doing right now as we speak. It's November 4th, 2012, and the Fed is printing between $40 and $80 billion a month. Artificially, I'm just talking about printing money here, not borrowing it from anybody, just printing it. Pallets and pallets of cash. Get it? De Gaulle was ahead of the pack. But before long, the other nations figured out the same thing and began demanding gold for the dollars they held. Soon, Washington began to hemorrhage gold as it faced demands to redeem tens of billions of its paper dollars. On a single day in March 1971, 400 tons of gold were taken from the exchange mechanism, the London gold pool forcing it to close. By August, President Nixon closed the gold window entirely, essentially defaulting on America's explicit promise of dollar convertibility. America was off the gold standard. Now, like France, Germany has had a bitter national experience with the hyperinflation of fiat currency. You remember seeing the pictures yourself. 2,000% inflation ripping Germany apart. People walking into restaurants with a wheelbarrow full of cash to have a meal. And you better pay for the meal before you sit down, because by the time you're done eating, the price is going to go up. That's how fast inflation was tearing the country apart. It should not be surprising if both nations are sensitive bellwethers when funny money business is afoot. Now, we are beginning to learn about steps Germany has been taking consistent with troubling questions today. This is written November 2nd, 2 days ago, about the world's central banks and the gold entrusted to their vaults. The UK Telegraph, Ambrose Evans Pritchard reports, a German court has ordered an inquiry into gold purportedly held for Germany in London, Paris, and New York. The German Court of Auditors told legislators in a redacted report — redacted means certain portions of the report were highlighted with black ink. I used to have that same problem in college. I could never figure it out. Well, I did finally. I went to yellow and used it as a highlighter. So my notes were no longer redacted. That's what we're talking about here, a black highlighter. In a redacted report that the gold had never been verified physically and ordered the Bundesbank to secure access to the storage sites. In other words, get your butt down to the bank and make sure our gold is in the storage site. And do it today. It called for repatriation of 150 tons over the next 3 years to test the quality and weight of the gold bars. It said Frankfurt has no register of numbered gold bars. The report also claimed that the Bundesbank had slashed its holdings in London from 1,440 tons to 500 tons in 2000 and 2001, allegedly because the storage costs were too high. The metal was flown to Frankfurt by air freight. It may be that an audit will prove that all of Germany's gold and foreign central banks can be accounted for. It may have been that France's gold would have been safe for decades in the hands of the Federal Reserve. But an environment like ours, toxic with money risk, demands good stewardship. Now, recently, this writer wrote an article questioning whether or not central banks have the gold they say they do. Even if the bullion is in inventory, there are pressing questions about who may hold actual title to the gold, whether it has been loaned, pledged, swapped, sold, oversold, double oversold. The Telegraph alludes to the issue of title as well, reporting the German court's action follows claims by the German civic campaign group Bring Back Our Gold and its U.S. allies in the Gold Antitrust Committee that official data cannot be trusted. Can you believe that? Official data cannot be trusted. It's sort of like looking at your checking account balance, and maybe you haven't written a check in 3 weeks or so, and you haven't used your debit card, so all the checks must have come in. Everything must be in. Everything must be balanced. And so you look at your check balance online, and it says, oh, I have whatever you have, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000 in your checking account. But is it really there? Could you really go out and write a check for what you got in that bank? I mean, you always wanted to know. What if you went down to the bank just that minute and said, look, I would like to make sure all of my checks have come in, and I would like to withdraw all my money. What if the official data could not be trusted? They allege central banks have loaned out or sold short much of their gold. That's exactly what I was talking about a few minutes ago, where J.P. Morgan Stanley has sold 30 million short contracts on the silver they claim they have in their vaults. Now, nobody's been arrested. No lawsuits have been filed that I know of. Wall Street hasn't done a thing about it, neither has the SEC or the Banking Commission. None of that has happened because J.P. Morgan Stanley is claiming that they're actually long on silver. That is to say, they actually own the metal. They own the metal. But then why are you shorting the metal? If you're long on the metal and you're shorting the metal, the reason is, my friends, is they want to keep the price low. They want to keep it low so they can acquire more. And that's what they do. They acquire the gold, they hold the gold, and then they'll let the price go up after they have cornered the market. Now, asking if gold bars are actually in place is a question of inventory. Is it there? Is it not? Questions about title are issues that should be answered by a thorough audit. In other words, how many people actually own this bar of gold? How many contracts have you actually sold on this gold? If we were to say, will all the owners of this gold please step forward, will the number just be one? Or will there be 1,000 people that step forward and say, hey, wait a minute, that's my gold? What do you think? 888-429-5471. But there remains equally justifiable concerns about the authenticity of the gold itself, the actual bar held by the central banks and other depositories for that matter. Another concerning topic is, you guessed it, fake gold. It is by no means a marginal issue, not at all, but one that is serious enough that this year, for the first time, some of the U.S. gold held by the New York Fed has been subjected to being drilled for assay samples to test for purity. Guess what? No results have been released. No results have been released. Those who showed up after August 15, 1971, with U.S. dollars they hoped to exchange for gold, were too late. But de Gaulle knew there was something fishy about U.S. monetary practices well before Nixon defaulted on America's gold promises. In today's troubled environment, Germany is acting like its monetary senses are tingling. They are warning. Signs aplenty for Americans that monetary conditions are growing more fragile by the day, and that the fiat dollar will not last. It would be nice to know that at least the people's gold assets are secure. In any case, remember this lesson. Do not leave your gold in the care of somebody else. Take physical possession of your gold. If you don't own gold, that's fine. It's expensive, I know, $1,800 an ounce or around that. But silver can be bought. It's roughly $32 an ounce now. It should be around $380 an ounce. And if it normalizes, and I suspect if Germany goes to pick up its gold and they open those vaults and there's nothing there but wooden pallets, there's going to be hell to pay. I would say that if they get the drill results of that gold and their gold-plated tungsten the way the Chinese got in 1990, there's going to be hell to pay. I would say that if Germany takes their gold out of that vault and the New York banks and the Fed no longer have that gold to leverage to print more cash, there's going to be hell to pay. And pay is what we will do. Get your metal. The global debt crisis has reached a dangerous new phase. This is an article by Mark Schneider. Very, very well done. Unfortunately, most Americans are not taking notice of it yet because most of the action is taking place over there. And because U.S. financial markets are riding high, and high they are. Oh, yeah. Come on. Superstorm Sandy just smacked the crap out of the Northeast. Our unemployment across the nation is somewhere around 11%. Real numbers now, real numbers. I'm not talking about manipulated numbers with 4% of the nation or 3% of the nation no longer looking for work. Here in North Carolina, some areas are at 16% unemployment. Among blacks, you're talking between 18 and 20% unemployment. It's horrible, this market. Oh, but the U.S. financial markets are riding high. The Dow is higher than it's ever been. Above 13,000. Why? Who the hell knows? Nobody's making money. Nobody's loaning money. Nobody's borrowing money. Money isn't moving. People aren't working. Commerce isn't going. Companies are not making a profit. But the U.S. financial markets are riding high. Just because the global economic crisis is unfolding at the pace of a slow-motion train wreck right now, does not mean that it isn't incredibly dangerous. The economic collapse is not going to be a single event. Don't look for a single shoe to drop. Open your eyes. Look around. Yes, there'll be days when the Dow drops by more than 500 points. There'll be days when reporters on CNBC appear to be hyperventilating. But mostly, there will be days of quiet despair, as the global economic system slides even further toward oblivion. And right now, things are clearly not getting better. They're getting worse. If you live in Greece, things are much worse than they were 6 months ago, and much is underlined. Things in Spain are even worse than that. Millionaires and business owners are draining billions out of the bank, moving out of the country. The same thing can be said for Italy, France, Japan, Argentina, and a whole bunch of other nations. Where are they going? They're just leaving. The entire global economy is slowing down, and we are entering a time period that is going to be incredibly painful for everybody. At the moment, the U.S. is still experiencing a sugar high. That means we just had a Monster and a 5-hour energy drink and a Baby Ruth all at the same time. Yeah, we've had unprecedented fiscal and monetary stimulus, which we didn't deserve and we didn't need. But when that sugar high wears off, the hangover is going to be excruciating. Reckless borrowing, spending, money printing has brought us a brief period of economic stability. but our foolish financial decisions will also make our eventual collapse far worse than it might have been. So don't think for a second that the U.S. will somehow escape the coming global economic crisis. It ain't going to happen. And when we change presidents in 2 days, on the third day, on Wednesday, you've heard the term austerity. Do you know what that means? It means cutbacks. It means budget cuts. Guess where those budget cuts are going to take place? That's exactly right. It's going to take place in the government program you love the most. Well, I don't care which one it is. It's going to be the one you love the most. I promise you that. We're talking about 100,000 to 150,000 federal workers are going to be given their pink slips. You think those government cutbacks are going to come in pencil erasers, in lawnmower blades, in post-it notes and ink pens? No. They're going to come in wages. They're going to be slicing departments apart. EPA, the Department of Education, the GSA, and couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of fellas as far as I'm concerned. The NHTSA, the Commerce Department, the Interior Department, and the list goes on and on and on. What's going to happen is a businessman is finally going to walk into Washington, and he's going to say, wait a minute, if you guys are doing this, and you guys are doing the same thing, or worse, you guys are doing this, and you guys are doing the exact opposite, forcing those guys to work harder, which is forcing you guys to work harder, guess what's going to happen? You got it. It's a great big pair of pruning shears. He's going to go in there with a sledgehammer and a light switch, and he's going to be busting up desks, and he's going to be turning off lights. We're not going to gain a balanced budget by shutting off the lights precisely at 5 o'clock and making all government buildings go dark when the day is over. That's not how it's going to be done. It's going to be budget cuts, big ones, not little ones. Now, the following are 21 signs that the global economic crisis is about to go to a whole new level. All right? Number one, Bank of Israel Governor Stanley Fisher says the global economy is awfully close to recession. Number two, it was announced last week that the unemployment rate in Greece has reached an all-time high. You better put your seatbelt back on. 25.1%. And that's the official one, my friends. One out of four people has no income whatsoever. Unemployment among those 24 years old or younger is now, get this, over 54%. 24 years old is a college graduate, okay? 24 years old or younger, 54%. Back in April 2010, the unemployment rate in Greece was only 11.8% only. That's where it is in North Carolina right now. Does that mean in 2 years North Carolina is going to be at 54% for 24 years and under? I shudder to think. The International, this is number three, the International Monetary Fund is warning that Greek debt may have to be, quote, restructured yet again. By the way, the International Monetary Fund doesn't make a dime. It doesn't earn a penny. The only thing it does is use a slush fund to temporarily hold off markets from collapsing. But guess what that slush fund's supposed to do? Once the market recovers, it's supposed to be paid back. It hasn't been paid back since Mexico recovered 15 years ago. Where do you think the International Monetary Fund gets its cash to, quote, restructure those countries? You got it. The Fed prints it. It's worthless. Number four, Swedish Finance Minister Anders Borg says that it is probable that Greece will leave the euro and that it might happen within the next 6 months. Number five, an angry crowd of approximately 40,000 angry Greeks recently descended on Athens to protest a visit by German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Do you know why? Because the Germans didn't want to bail out the Greeks. The Greeks were mad, saying, well, look, we're not willing to take cuts. We know you've got the money. And since you have the money, you need to give it to us. From high school students to pensioners, tens of thousands of Greek demonstrators swarmed into Athens yesterday to show the visiting German Chancellor Angela Merkel their indignation at their country's continued austerity measures. Flouting the government's ban on protests, an estimated 40,000 people, many carrying posters depicting Ms. Merkel as a Nazi, descended on Syntagma Square near the parliament building. Masked youths pelted riot police with rocks as the officers responded with tear gas. The authorities had deployed 7,000 police, water cannon, and a helicopter. Snipers were placed on the rooftops to ensure the German leader's safety. Now, this is what we looked at on the TV for Greece, and we didn't get to see it all, I can guarantee you that. We've never seen stuff like that in this country. But what do you think would happen if the food stamp cards were shut off for 7 days? You think what happened in Greece is bad? You get the picture. Number six, the debt crisis in Argentina is becoming increasingly troublesome. Number seven, the government debt to gross domestic product ratio in Italy is expected to hit 126%. By the way, 125% is the danger point. In Greece, it's expected to hit 198%. In Japan, once a dynamo, a economic leader around the world, a technology leader, a quality automotive leader, it's a 237%. Number eight, Standard & Poor's has slashed its credit rating on Spanish government to BBB-. That's just one level above junk bonds, people. Number nine, back in the year 2000, the ratio of total debt to GDP in Spain was 192%. That's almost double. I mean, that's almost four times the gross domestic product. That means that they're only earning about 25% of what they're spending. By 2011, just 11 years later, get this, it reached 363%. It means that they're spending 363% more than they're making as a country. Number 10, record amounts of money are being pulled out of Spanish banks. I already told you that. Number 11, I'm sorry, that was 10. Number 11, manufacturing activity in Spain has contracted for 17 months in a row. That means it shrunk. Same as in the United States, only it's been way over 17 months. It's been almost 45 months now. Number 12, it is being projected that home prices in Spain will fall by another 15% by the end of 2013. Number 13, the unemployment rate in France is now above 10%, and it has risen for 16 months in a row. Ours rose for approximately 44 months here in the United States until they pulled some shenanigans with the numbers. Number 14, there are signs that Switzerland may be preparing for major civil unrest throughout Europe. Now, it's not going to happen inside of Switzerland, mind you. It's going to happen everywhere outside Switzerland. And that means that people will be running to Switzerland because Switzerland will be a place of refuge. Well, Switzerland is preparing for major civil unrest because Switzerland is where everybody stores their money. Number 15, former top economist at the European Central Bank says that the ECB has fallen into a state of panic as it desperately tries to solve the European debt crisis. Who are they in debt to? Ah, you got it. They're in debt to China. Number 16, according to a recent IMF report, European banks may need to sell off $4.5 trillion in assets over the next 14 months in order to meet new strict capital requirements. I got a big question for you, Europe. Who is going to buy the assets? Nobody has any money except for China. Number 17, in August, U.S. exports dropped to the lowest level we have seen since last February. Number 18, economics professor Barry Eichengreen is very concerned about what is coming next for the stocks in the United States. He says, I'm worried that stock markets in the U.S. in particular have gotten ahead of economic growth. No kidding. It takes an economics professor to figure that out? Holy crap, we're in a lot more trouble than I thought. Number 19, during the week of ending October 3rd, which is just about 4 weeks ago, investors pulled more than $10 billion out of U.S. mutual funds. Overall, a total of more than $100 billion has been pulled out of U.S. mutual funds so far this year. I could tell you, I did too. Yes, I sold all my mutual fund stocks about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I paid my 10% hit. I took the money and I paid off all my debts. I have been debt-free for many years. And as the market managers were losing my money, I managed to sell off all my mutual funds and pay my debts off. 20, we're almost there. As I wrote about the other day, the IMF is warning that there is an alarmingly high risk of a deeper global economic slowdown. And 21, when shipping companies start laying off workers, that's one of the best signs that economic activity is slowing down. That's why it was so troubling when it was announced that FedEx is planning to get rid of, guess what, several thousand workers over the coming months. Folks, it's Christmas. They shouldn't be laying people off. They should be hiring people, and they're not. And what does that tell you? It tells you the economy has stopped. When shipping stops, the economy is only a few steps behind. Lots going on. Next week I'm going to be in Holland. We'll probably run an archive. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio. We'll see you next week.